We have a few new people in the room that weren't here last month. Can you please raise your hand? So, thank you. Special welcome to you folks. Special welcome. It's very beautiful that we get to meet like this in such a beautiful place. I don't know about you, but there's such a sense of grace that's very present in the fact of this for me. That we're here together, that there's such love and genuineness within us and between us, and that we get to form community out of that deep, sincere love for reality, for what we are, for truth, and that we get to live in a country where, and at a time, where we're not persecuted for exploring this homecoming beyond the confines of any one order or tradition that doesn't have a problem with whether we're male or female, where it's just free and available, and here we are. And yesterday I was meditating, and I sometimes like to sit with some of my favorite scriptures, and yesterday I was sitting with A Course in Miracles, and I came across a lesson. It was the third from last lesson. And it said, I have no cause for anger or for fear, for you are with me. And in every need that I perceive, grace suffices. In every need that I perceive, grace suffices. So you come to know that this emphasis on grace is very important to me. I emphasize it a lot in the teachings. And sometimes it's a bit of a nebulous term, so I'm going to be very explicit about what I mean. Grace is that palpable, direct experience where we know, where we're penetrated by a reality that's so full and loving and nourishing, deeper than our mind, that we didn't construct, that just is. And this is very important, because if we truly recognized the depth of grace that is with us, fear would be impossible. If we truly received the gift of the earth underneath us, and where that really comes from, the earth that we take for granted, that is there underneath our feet at all times, unconditionally, for everything and everyone, has no judgment in it, is just support and goodness and nourishment, is really the tip of the iceberg, the very, very pinprick at the fountain of the immensity of support that exists in the groundless ground of being. So that's why, as we were settling just now, I was inviting you to sense your body, sense the chair, so simple. Recognize that there is a depth of support that's just here, that isn't coming from any effort, that isn't a structure of your mind or some historical learned idea. It just is, and you can feel it. But what if the fact of the chair and the floor and the cushion is really just the pinprick? It's just the end of the line. And that underneath all of that is more than just substance that we know, rocks and minerals and fluids and elements. But we know that, what does that arise out of? And we see that there's this vast, dynamic, powerful dynamism that causes everything to manifest the way it does. And then where does that come from? And we see that there's just this vast, infinite space, and what in Buddhism is called the groundless ground of being. But it's a deep ground. And it's a ground that isn't just empty of mind, it's also full. Full of presence and support and immensity. For what? For you. For all of us, for all of life. And we often don't stop to actually consciously receive it, and to receive that as grace, which it is. To receive also the sunlight. We enjoy the sunlight. It's a beautiful day today. The sun shines every day, even though there might be clouds, but the sun shines. And beyond the mere atoms and the science of it, there's also a vastness. The source of mind itself is profound and subtle and mysterious. There are traditions that think of the sun as if all the enlightened beings are meditating, as if the light that we can see isn't just a physical substance, it's actually consciousness. And it's helpful to consider that possibility as a way of returning our awareness to receive. Because every enlightened being who's ever existed is beyond the limitations of body, space, and time. And that means the realization of Ramana Maharshi is here, available. It explains why you can pray to an enlightened being and actually receive help. I don't know whether you've tried it. I highly recommend. When I was leading the Interfaith Seminary in England, each month, you know, we had quite a substantial reading list, and a lot of the reading was contemplation on the scriptures. And each time we were studying a different tradition, the students would be asked to contemplate, contemplatively read the scriptures. And of course, you can't read scriptures with your ordinary mind. They don't really make a lot of sense. They're not novels. They're not information. Their transmission. And so you have to relax your mind to take in what's really being given. Good idea whenever you're around a decent spiritual teaching is to relax and bathe in the transmission that's here, to just drink. We need that spiritual hydration. We really need it. Our world needs it. I don't know whether you've noticed, but we seem to be at a bit of a crucial tipping point. It's clear we're coming to the end of the line about how much further we can collectively continue based upon the crude kind of consciousness that we seem to be functioning out of. If you read a newspaper, what you'll really see, if you look in a fresh way, is just ego running amok. Ego's doing what egos do. Ego's being greedy. Ego's behaving, thinking, and acting as though they don't have an impact on everybody else. Ego's behaving from the belief that they are separate and that it is possible for one to thrive whilst the others are not thriving. Egos, you know, being narcissistic, selfish, grabby, greedy, lustful, frightened, controlling, aggressive, domineering. Correct? Yeah, that's what we see. Right. And so, what does that have to do with us? Well, we have a choice. We either, you know, continue along the trajectory of, you know, living out of that fundamental misperception that we are who we think we are, reacting from our history, or we get to work. We get to work doing the thing that's actually most important in life, which is exploring and allowing to dissolve the egoic impediments that block the spiritual circuits. Now, all of the great traditions have given technologies, methods for that and how that happens. And as you know, the primary methodology I'm offering you here is holistic self-inquiry. So holistic self-inquiry invites us to just be wherever we are and meet what's actually here. Meet what's arising and don't do what we normally do with it. So egos are always trying to manipulate their experience to get some preferable ego experience. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed? Constant pushing and pulling. Constant reject this, control that, grab for this. It's incessant. And it's the cause of our loss of peace, moment to moment. So it's really important that we take a look at the habits, the strategies of mind. They're not really any different in you than they are in me. But of course, they get woven into our personality, and that's very unique. According to, you know, what messages we received, how we coalesced those messages into a sense of individual me-ness that comes with the machinery of being human. So often what a deep spiritual practice is about dissolving that me I think I am. And I'm not sure whether I said it to this group or to another, but it's actually a Buddhist teaching about the analogy that letting go of just one identity or habit or way of knowing yourself feels very disorienting at first. It feels very scary. And our ego cleaves to what it knows. Worships familiarity as the primary deity. If this were an ego's, you know, altar, and have the familiar, what I know. And so it clings to what I know. As if it's the most precious thing. Usually while screaming bloody murder and complaining at the same time. One of my earlier teachers, a beautiful man called Tom Carpenter, he floored me one day when he said, what you have in your life is either what you truly want or what you believe you deserve. That's a big one. And of course, at the time that he said that, I was in my 20s and I instinctively reacted to it, but when I actually sat with it, I realized that was true. That if some pattern or crunchy condition exists in my life that's seemingly preventing peace, it's serving some purpose. There's something valuable in it, either valuable to my soul, i.e. there's some learning or there's some grace that's trying to come through, some wisdom that's being birthed or has the potential to be birthed through this situation. Or it reflects something that on some level I want. So when I looked at that for myself, I realized that every pattern or habit of mind that I have and complain about actually is serving a purpose. When I looked at what purpose that was serving, invariably I come across the same answer, in that it's preserving the sense of me and the sense of reality that I know. So yesterday I was in session with a beautiful guy who comes to see me for deepening in the actualization process. He's a very deep practitioner and is in training as a Dharma teacher and as a therapist. He's a wonderful guy, dealing with some pretty serious health challenges, but he knows he's really on the cusp of a whole other level of abiding in consciousness. Yesterday he was speaking to me about the fact that he resists his meditation practice. Now, the training that he's in requires several hours of meditation practice a day, and he loves it and wants to do it. So he was exploring his resistance yesterday. So I asked him a kind of question that I often ask, which is, tell me a way you resist your practice. Pretty direct. So he rattled off a list of stuff he does. I go to the internet and I shop things I don't really need, even though I don't buy it. I just spend time surfing the internet, or turn on the TV and I just watch stuff, and I stay up too late, which means I don't get enough sleep and I don't get up early enough in time in the morning to meditate. Or I go to the fridge, even though I'm not really hungry, and I just see what's there. Then I eat something and then I regret it. Stuff that we all do. Procrastinating and avoiding. And I said, what does this give you that you think you need? He said something really beautiful, interesting, that is so on the money. He says, I know that my ego isn't even really real. I'm seeing I'm not even real. This sense of me that I thought I was doesn't even exist. And I'm terrified. So we were surfing into that yesterday. The terror of not existing in the way you know yourself, which is what all resistance fundamentally is about. What all avoidance fundamentally is about. If you look. And Ramana Maharshi said that in due course we will come to know that our glory lies when we cease to exist. Did you love Ramana? Straight to it. Only, you know, it's a subtle thing, because the ego hears that and then starts to try to annihilate itself. Doesn't it? Gets involved in the process. Right, let's try and not exist in the way I know myself. So it comes back to this dichotomy of surrender, which is why I keep bringing us back to that beautiful transmission that came through in the cave. Be nothing, do nothing, get nothing, become nothing, seek for nothing, relinquish nothing. Be as you are, rest in God. In other words, sweetheart, relax. You're not the one that can do it. You're not the one who's supposed to know the way. The self you think you are can't get enlightened. That self doesn't need to be fixed or improved or changed or tweaked. We just want to explore, who are you deeper? What's deeper than this meanness and my fear? What else is there? Now, when we genuinely start to feel into that space, often it's that feeling as if we're jumping out of an aeroplane without a parachute. Or it's that feeling of disorientation. It's a disorienting feeling. And the reason for that disorientation is because actually there's a loosening, a dissolving of a self-image, which is a boundary in our mind and in our subtle body, which we've adopted as me, but it's not. Who we are is so much more profound and free than any self-image, either positive or negative. So part of the real work here is learning to soften into that felt sense of I don't know, that feels disorienting, that feels like I have zero clue. I cannot lead or direct the process here. You see, but our ego wants to think I am the captain of my own ship. Which is actually a pretty funny and arrogant assertion. You know, it's on one level that's helpful in terms of coming out of victimhood, taking personal responsibility, but at a deeper level, it's arrogant. What birthed you into existence? What causes you to draw breath? What causes you to even be interested to be in a room like this, right here and right now? What causes you to hear my words and recognize the truth of them? What is that that recognizes? Did someone have to teach you how to recognize? They did not. And this is how we start to discriminate what's a learned impression and what's part of the pure, essential, original I am-ness. It isn't I am this or I am that, it's just I am. And in that I am-ness, there is a sense of humility. There's no appropriation. There's no pride, there's no arrogance. There's no trying, there's no posturing. There's just this unarguable purity and beauty and majesty and truth that is what it is. It's infinitely spacious and empty. And yet it's full of all kinds of qualities, and that's the grace. But we can go through all kinds of challenges and difficulties in the course of our human life, and we all have, it's part of it. And yet this depth in us is unshakable. It's holy, it's God. So we're here together to journey together deeper into direct, real, lived knowledge of this truth and come to know it. Come to know it. Come to rest in it. Let every pattern, every fear, every greedy, grabby, scared tendency of our ego come relax in this ground. It's the one solution. And as we practice together, we remember that we sit here and journey together for the benefit of everything and everyone. That we sit here representing everything and everyone we've ever known and ever will know. As if our sitting is welcoming them home too. So, here we are. The invitation is to see where you are in relation to what I've said. What comes up for you? Where does this meet where you are in your practice? And particularly what you're knocking up against, whether it be a challenge, an impediment, or whether it be a question, something you want to explore. So it's all welcome, whatever you want to bring to the chair. And let's go.